Welcome to the fourth episode of podcasts with IEEE Electron Devices Society Luminaries.
As the world's largest professional organization, IEEE plays significant role to enhance the quality of our life. Electron Devices Society, or EDS, encompasses activities involving electron devices, the main enabler for today's digital world. I'm Muhammad Mustafa Hussein, a professor of electrical engineering and computer science of University of California, Berkeley. I play a variety of roles in different capacities within the Electron Devices Society of IEEE. In this series of podcasts, we will be interviewing those EDS members who have made remarkable impacts in our society through their innovations and dedication. Our guest today is someone, because of his invention, we can use a smartphone and other portable devices to take photos and videos at any time when we want. Professor Eric R. Fossum is best known for the invention of the CMOS image sensor camera on a chip, used in billions of cameras, from smartphones to web cameras to pill cameras and many other applications. Professor Fossum is a solid-state image sensor device physicist and engineer, and his career has included academic and government research and entrepreneurial leadership. He is the John H. Krebiel Senior Professor for Emerging Technologies at the Thayer School of Engineering at Dartmouth in Hanover, New Hampshire, where he teaches, performs research on the Quanta Image Sensors, or QIS, and directs the school's PhD innovation program. He also serves as Dartmouth's Associate Provost for Entrepreneurship and Technology Transfer. Born and raised in Connecticut, Professor Fossum attended public school in Simsbury and spent Saturdays at the Talcott Mountain Science Center in Avon. He received his bachelor's degree in physics and engineering from Trinity College in Hartford and a PhD in engineering and applied science from Yale University in New Haven. He was a member of Columbia University's electrical engineering faculty and then joined the NASA Jet Propulsion Laboratory, Caltech, where he managed JPL's image sensor and focal plane technology research and advanced development. While at JPL, he invented the intrapixel charge transfer CMOS active pixel sensor camera on a chip technology and led its development and subsequent transfer of the technology to US industry. Nearly all the 6 billion CMOS cameras made each year use the intrapixel charge transfer invention. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you very much for asking. Just a little bit tired of Zooming all the time and working from home, but can't wait for the pandemic to be over.
Well, before I go for the whole segment of this interview with you, I wanted to thank you for two reasons. One is, allowing your time to be with us. So that's one. And secondly, although we are getting a bit tired by looking at Zoom, but this is all happening because of one of your innovations. We are going to actually hear about that innovation and many of other stories that general people, let's put it this way, who might not be completely acquainted with you, will know about you, the person, Eric Fossum. Okay. So I'll start from the very beginning, and the question will be, how was your childhood and school life?
My childhood was normal, I would say. Nothing dramatic and nothing bad. And I grew up in the suburbs in Connecticut and went to public school. And school life was fine. I wasn't a very good student. I didn't try very hard. School was too easy. So it was was like, if I could just do almost no work and still get a B, I was quite happy. So life was good. Life was good.
Well, let me ask you this question. I think you preserved your energy and everything, all the talent, the genius for the later part of your life, and they preserved it during your school time. Do you consider it as a regret?
No. I mean, I didn't know any better at the time because my parents weren't highly educated, and my friends that and their parents weren't particularly highly educated. So it was never something on my mind to like press forward. But I did have a chance to go to a special Saturday program for science at the Talcott Mountain Science Center in Connecticut. And that really, fortunately, ignited my interest in science and doing things. So fortunately, that science center really kind of saved me, I think.
Very good. So there are two interesting points, and I will be asking you two questions. But let me ask you a question, because you said that that special Saturday session on science that ignited your curiosity towards science. And in science, there are many different things. It could have been genome sequencing. It could have been rocket science, the popular term. But you chose to contribute to the field of electron devices. And what really ignited your passion regarding that?
Yeah, well, during my science center days, I was studying meteorology and computer science for the most part, these two things. But later in high school, I discovered physics and realized it came very easily to me. So I was happy about that. And I found in college also physics was pretty easy for me. But I was also very interested in computer science and artificial intelligence. And this was way before AI became anything. So that also fascinated me. And then when I finally, it was really at grad school going to Yale that I was in a group that was on electron devices. And I realized, wow, my interest in artificial intelligence and devices could actually be realized if we tried to do things like making smart eyeballs. That's what I was thinking about. Like, how could we even just put some smarts into an eye? And that was back at the beginning of my graduate school days. So that really made me very interested in electron devices. I found it very, I would say, yeah, kind of easy to understand with my physics background. So that also helped. I mean, it's came naturally and very rewarding because we could go into the laboratory and actually make devices and measure them, do new things like very thin oxide transistors at that time, tunnel oxide transistors.
Very interesting. It's a great vision, right? Like when we look at even today, we might not completely realize that without the ability for machines, let's quote it this way, to see things, what you made that happen, it would not have been possible to realize that whether they would ever be trained to think the way that we think, right? So that interface was an absolute necessity, and looking at that stage is, and obviously we need the physics to make that happen. Anyone like, you know, that I have talked to with your stature, they say that the electron device is really brings both the physics and engineering together. And that's where that they feel that this is something that we should be doing. And you mentioned about your college life and then followed by your graduate life in Yale. So any interesting stories that you would like to share with us?
interesting stories. Well, I was fortunate to be in a very good group at Yale. I enjoyed it a lot at the time, but I'm really amazed where some of my classmates wound up. So I guess I chose well in terms of choosing good classmates, like T.C. Chen, who was a vice president of research at IBM, and C.C. Wei, who is now CEO of TSMC. We were all eating lunch together and working in the laboratory together and fixing lab equipment together. And that was really probably the best time of my life was in graduate school, because there was no real, you don't really have any cares. It's just like go day to day, research something that you're interested in and get the result. Sometimes some days were not as good as others, or like we like to say, some days you eat bear and some days the bear eats you. But that's okay. That's right. You know? So yeah, I enjoyed that a great deal.
Right. That's a top-notch cohort. I've seen some photos because T.P. Ma, that once he was, he showed me, like, you know, the two of the photos where C.C. Wei were there together, and the other one was with T.C. Chen. It can't get better than that. Let's put it this way. It's the Beatles.
Yeah, I chose well, didn't I? That's the
way I like it. Of course. I think T.C. Went to IBM, and C.C., I think after some time, he went to TSMC. But let's talk about, like, after your PhD, what was your first job and how was the experience?
Yeah, actually, when I was in graduate school, I got a Howard Hughes doctoral fellowship. I spent the summers at the Hughes Aircraft Company in Southern California. Actually, I was offered a position at Hughes Malibu Research Labs, but I turned that down for a position in their missile systems group working on infrared sensors because it was closer to my interest. And I have always had a strong interest in kind of seeing things that I work on kind of become practical in a short period of time. So it was a very interesting set of problems. And they made me a very nice offer when I finished at Yale, but I also was very interested in being independent and choosing my own thing. Maybe I got spoiled in graduate school. I wound up with two offers, one from Princeton and one from Columbia, and I wound up going to Columbia to teach for a while.
Well, the city of New York, attracted you more?
Not exactly. One of the faculty, senior faculty at Columbia, Ragazgan, said, well, you could go to Princeton and have a nice white picket fence and green grass and very relaxing life, but you probably won't accomplish too much because it's so relaxing, you won't feel motivated. Whereas if you come to New York, where the city that never sleeps and always stressful, you will always like keep working. You probably accomplish more. And I actually kind of bought that argument and wound up choosing Columbia. But actually, I did not really enjoy living in New York City that much. And part of the reason is just New York is very enjoyable when you can spend lots of money on things. It's an expensive city to live in. And when you are an assistant professor married and trying to get started, you do not have that much discretionary money. So New York is, you can't do all the fun stuff that you can do later when you do have money.
That's very practical. I think this portion of this interview is going to be resonated with many, many young faculty. And like, you know, every time there is a transition that comes with some of the perks, but at the same time, many, many challenges that need to be overcome. One interesting, I think, like This is going to be a little bit complicated because I'm going to ask you, you have worked on many interesting things, okay, and significantly contributed to that. But we do know about the image sensor. And so let me ask you this question. Image sensor is right, kind of defines your the portfolio. Is there any other thing that you also liked a lot that you have worked on beyond image sensor?
Sure. I mean, I worked on tunnel oxides early on at Yale. And when I went to Columbia, we started doing oxidation of silicon by ion beam, which produced very self-limited growth tunnel oxides, mm-hmm. actually could build transistors out of. I worked a lot on 3-5 CCDs, not necessarily for image sensors, but for signal processing. So like gigahertz, 2D electron gas, CCDs, that sort of thing, which we built at Columbia in the clean room there. Enjoyed that a lot. We made great progress, explored a lot of different material systems. But you know what? What I regret a little bit about that is that work never went anywhere.
Okay.
You know, we learned a lot. We published papers, gave talks, but from an industry point of view, it didn't go anywhere. So I did work on other things, but I have to say in retrospect, it was a lot less satisfying just because it is so much more satisfying to see your technology actually getting used by people.
Yes.
And there's just night and day between those two different outcomes.
Well, I think, you know, Mark Lundstrom of Purdue University, he always says that repurposing silicon, electronics, or other things. And I'm sure that with the advent in many other different areas, which we didn't perceive couple of decades back, now they are using the electronic technology more and more. And surely no good work actually gets wasted. From my limited experience, that all I can say, like, you know, papers and like, you know, those are kind of just a, you know, the marker, but at the end of the day, it's a good work is never gets wasted. Going back to the image sensor, do you remember any eureka moment that, this idea of working on the image sensor, was it an evolved idea in yourself or it was just a hit of the moment, it just came to you that, okay, why I'm not doing this?
Yeah, I get asked that question frequently and you're going to be disappointed by my answer because I had been thinking about active pixel devices as a paradigm shift from CCDs, as were several other people at that time. And actually what happened was I wrote a proposal to JPL where I was working to investigate some very, very, let's call them clever active pixel approaches, which involved doing devices in the micro devices lab at JPL, and pretty expensive program I proposed, and it was rejected. I was like, oh, that is just so disappointing. And then I said, I still want to do this thing. What can I do with standard CMOS that can I at least demonstrate some of these ideas? And realize, okay, I don't have any real budget, but I'd like go to Moses and fabricate some devices. And what can I do to make it work in CMOS? And then I had the idea, which, okay, that was kind of just happened. There was no bolt of lightning or anything that happened, but it had the idea. But then my very first thought wasn't eureka. It was, oh, this is too simple. This somebody must have thought of this before. And it must not work. And I'm just not smart enough to figure out why it doesn't work. And So it was an anti-Eureka moment. It was like, what's wrong with this idea? Why hasn't someone done this already? And that was the putting the micro CCD, or CMOS image sensor with interpixel charge transfer idea that made the first devices that we made work, and which are is still being used today in all CMOS image sensors on the planet.
Right. I think most inventive mind, they find it when they look at the ways, they look at a thing in the way that others are just don't see it that way, right? So for you, that was a simple solution, but that's why it became elegant, and that's why it became so universal and effective, in the sense that, well, if I can do it this way, right? Because two complex things take a lot of time, but sometimes we just ignore the fact that it's just maybe in front of our eyes, and that's the part of the genius that, well, I see it, others are missing it. From that perspective, during this development process while you were working on it, is there any interesting memory that associated with during the development of this?
Well, so first of all, I want to thank JPL for rejecting my proposal, so that it forced me to come up with some other avenue, which turned out to be using the mainstream technology, which was the key to its adoption and success. And then, you know, I'm not sure how interesting this is, but, you know, everybody else working on image sensors was working on CCDs, charge coupled devices. And that was where the market was. And actually, most of my friends, electron device type people, I won't name names, but they thought it was not a good idea at all. They were all working on CCDs. And I actually was at a small conference, and the chairman of the conference invited me to have a debate on stage about this new technology compared to CCDs. And I said, sure. And we came up on stage, kind of an impromptu moment. And he turned to me and said, Eric, people have worked on devices like that years ago, and we all know it doesn't work. Why are you pursuing this bad idea and promoting it? And I was just speechless. I wasn't sure what to say at that moment, because it's such a challenge from a well-respected person. And, but then, you know, I made my arguments, and there weren't a lot of people in the audience that agreed with me at that point in time, but at least I'd be able to change everybody's mind now, so 20 or 30 years later.
Who does not want to have a finger, like, you know, the fingernail size, the chip scale camera? Is just so obvious, right? Like, it has to happen. It's the beauty of miniaturization, but the complexities involved with that miniaturization, the physics, the design aspect, choice of material, including the device dimensions, right? The process technology, the integration, it's all with that. That was the part of we discussed a bit of your passion for the electron device, and that evolved through this idea of image sensor. If you would have chosen a completely different, like, topic that you would want to work on, maybe you are already working on or something like that, or you couldn't make the time, what would it have been?
Oh, there's so many interesting, and you talk about in the field of electron devices, I assume.
It can be anything, any technology.
Well, it's there's everything that's interesting to me in electron devices, just about, because there's a lot of fascinating devices and fascinating, important inventions. I would have liked to work more on light emission rather than light detection, because they're very related things. And still to this day, I'm very interested in, can we build, and I don't, quite have time or the background to do this, but I want to build a device that emits one photon at a time in a very controlled way. That's not really possible at this time. People can emit a single photon, of course, and know that they've emitted a photon, but making it do it on demand exactly when you want the photon is not quite there yet. So something like that would be really interesting to me. If I was doing it all over again and from way back, I don't know, maybe more neuroscience, biologically inspired bioengineering work would be quite interesting to me too. I think that's the future for kids today. I think, you know, not too many students are at the universities are interested in electron devices as it used to be. And when I was growing up, I say that the building block was TTL part, TTL NAND gate or something like that. And now the building block for people in electronics is iPhone. Start with iPhone and build from there. They don't get down into the details as much as I feel like the little things did.
Yeah, this is something is noticeable because without our comfort, without our accessibility to this kind of a smartphone, if we talk about Uber, Lyft, if we talk about the social media, if we talk about many of the apps that we see, those have become handy because of that specific hardware, right? One hardware can give a longevity of applications and innovation for next 15 to 20 years. And that's exactly the reason that at least a significant portion of our students and us, we need to focus on the hardware part to come up with a new device, which will also be something that can draw all the software-oriented applications to different corners of the society. And if that is the case, then the next question is, this part was like on the set for more philosophical, but this is absolutely relevant and the transition is far more smooth. Is what is your thought about the electronics in the future?
Right. Well, I'm sure we'll get to true molecular electronics before long. It would be great if it was biocompatible electronics because maybe I read too much science fiction growing up and still believe it, but I think implanting electronics for a direct brain electronics interface is going to be a giant leap for humans. Imagine we can access memory or communications or whatever just by using these implanted electronics, perhaps, that are biocompatible in our brain. I think if I were starting all over again today, that would be like a direction that we'd want to head into.
Yeah, that will definitely change the landscape, the way that we know and use the electronics today. So from that perspective, if you're being asked to actually talk about any application that you would like to see in future, but that does not exist, because implantable electronics, well, we do have the pacemaker, but I still feel that that can be far more convenient than it's in its current form. And obviously there is the brain machine interfacing. There is a lot of other applications, the drug delivery we have seen for implantable or other. But if there is an application that you would like to see it to happen, which one that would be?
Oh, well, don't laugh at me, but at my age, which isn't that old, but already I can say, I wish I had implantable memory that I could access that was more reliable than my neurons right now, because it'd be kind of interesting to be able to look stuff up immediately. Although I think when I was young, I had a very good memory and could memorize things fast and for a long time. I still remember pi out to 26 digits. But these days, being able to access supplemental memory would be very, very convenient. And how can we make something like that happen?
Soon enough. Okay. Is there anything that strikes your mind which could have been better today?
Improvements? Well, I think, you know, I still think about image sensors and how they can be improved. And we're working on that, you know, even now at my lab at Dartmouth, we're working on the possible next generation image sensor technology that counts photons one at a time without using any avalanche multiplication. This quantum image sensor built in CMOS, which the short answer, since it's mostly electron device people that might be listening to this podcast, is can we build a capacitor small enough that when we put one electron, one photoelectron on that capacitor, that we can detect the induced voltage above the thermal noise floor or one over the noise floor? And the answer is yes, we can. And I think there's still a lot of room for that, and that coupled to computational imaging is, I think, pretty interesting situation for the future of imaging. But maybe you were thinking about other things besides image sensors.
No, I think that's a lot for many to actually to take this specific part of your vision and work on it, because it is seems to be it's getting, when we would like to have more and more functionalities, we need actually more people to work on it. Sometimes it can also be multidisciplinary engagement can enable that at a much faster pace. And the different the functionalities that we can think of. This is the last question from the part of which is kind of the philosophical. What is your one piece of advice for the younger generation?
Well, aside from the big advice, which is enjoy your life, because life is short, I think, you know, from a student point of view, is to study and do something that they really truly enjoy. So pick something that is not, you think, like, I have to study medicine because that's what my parents want me to do, or I want to study this field because I hear right now the job market is hot in that field. Really, if people are able to, if they can have the luxury of studying something they really enjoy and doing it for a living, I think that's far more important than practically anything else.
Right. I think you chase your passion, if possible.
Dr. Fossum co-founded Photobit Corporation to commercialize the technology and served in several top management roles, including chairman and CEO. Photobit was acquired by Micron Technology. He was chairman and CEO of Simple Corporation, developing MEMS-based camera modules with autofocus and shutter functions for cell phones. He was a consultant with Samsung Electronics, working on 3D image sensors and strategic issues for several years before joining Dartmouth. He co-founded GigaJot Technology with his former Dartmouth PhD students to commercialize the photon counting QoS technology, and serves as chairman. In 2017, Professor Eric Fossum received the Queen Elizabeth Prize from His Royal Highness Prince Charles, considered by many as the Nobel Prize of Engineering, for the creation of digital imaging sensors, along with three others. He was inducted into the National Inventors Hall of Fame, elected to the National Academy of Engineering, and selected as a Charter Fellow of the National Academy of Inventors. Other honors include the NASA Exceptional Achievement Medal, the IEEE Andrew Grove Award and Medal, the OSA and ISNT Edwin H. Land Medal, the Distinguished Eagle Scout Award and Medal, the Royal Photographic Society's Progress Medal, the American Photographic Society's Progress Medal, the SMPTE Camera Origination and Imaging Medal,
induction in the Space Technology Hall of Fame at the National Science Foundation Presidential Young Investigator Award. He was awarded Yale's Wilbur Cross Medal and Trinity College Alumni Medal for Excellence. An early photobit sensor and camera were on display at the Smithsonian National Museum of American History's Invention in America exhibit, currently on display at the National Inventors Hall of Fame Museum at United States Patent Technology Office. He served as an AAAS Lemonson Invention Ambassador. Photobit's PV100 camera on a chip is in the IEEE Spectrum Chip Hall of Fame. Dr. Eric Fossum has published over 300 technical papers and holds over 170 U.S. patents. He co-founded the International Image Sensor Society and was its first president. He is a fellow member of the IEEE, a fellow member of the Optical Society of America, and a member of the Society of Motion Picture and Television Engineers, SMPTE, and the American Association for the Advancement of Science, AAAS. Professor Eric Fossum volunteers on the International Image Sensor Society Board of Directors, the Board of Trustees of Trinity College, the Selection Committee and Selection Board of the National Inventors Hall of Fame, the Board of Trustees from the Talcott Mountain Science Center and Academy. He has served on the Board of Directors of the National Academy of Inventors, the Leadership Council of the Yale University School of Engineering and Applied Science, the Peer Selection Committee for the NAE, the Fellow Selection Committee of the NAI. He also actively supports Camp Invention and the Collegiate Inventors Competition, two programs operated by NIHF.
It has been announced recently, Professor Eric Fossum is one of the few recipients of the 72nd Annual Technology and Engineering Emmy Awards. The honor comes from the National Academy of Television Arts and Sciences for inventing and pioneering the intrapixel charge transfer CMOS image sensor, the basis for all modern CMOS image sensors, including almost all cell phone cameras, webcams, and many digital still cameras.
Well, now I will actually switch to a more lighthearted questionnaire. And although I'm supposed to tell you that a one-word answer is preferable, but with my first question, I'm going to violate that rule, and we cannot restrict you. So take your time. And okay, so you ready? It's kind of rapid fire round.
Go ahead.
Okay. What are your hobbies?
Well, that's plural. That's already more than one word.
That's what I say.
No, I have a hobby farm, and I like to use my tractor and my excavator and construct things and build trails in the woods and push rocks around. It's my favorite hobby.
Very good. Music or movie? Which one do you enjoy more?
I'd say movie.
Okay. Any specific genre?
Oh, I like science fiction. I like action. Sometimes I watch drama movies, but mostly okay. Sci-fi and action.
Okay. What is the book you are reading now?
Well, it's not very impressive. I tend to, when I do read, I like to relax. So Pulp Fiction, so I'm like reading about the Jack Reacher series of books or Harry Bosch series of books. Although in the past, I read a lot of science fiction books.
Okay. What is your favorite cuisine?
Oh, American, which means all kinds of things, whether it's pasta or taco type food or lots of different kinds of food, actually. Meat and potatoes. The only thing I don't like is fish. I wish I liked fish. I know it's good for me, but I just can't take the taste of fish for some reason.
Well, you have some company. That makes two of us. Okay. Any sports you enjoy?
Well, I used to enjoy doing Taekwondo, actually during my days at Yale. Not that I was very good, but I enjoyed that quite a bit. And these days I enjoy hiking and more solitary sports, not so much team sports.
Okay. You have traveled a lot. So if you are being asked to pick one travel destination that really, really you like.
Yeah, I have to say that my wife and I have taken two safaris now, one to Southern Africa and another to Sri Lanka. And we really enjoyed both of those trips a lot. We both love nature and we both love animals and being outside. And it's a luxury to do a safari, but I was going to say once in a lifetime, but actually now it's twice in a lifetime. And if COVID's over, we'll do it a third time, I'm sure.
I had the opportunity with my family to be in South Africa and Richard Branson's, that he has his own reservoir. And it was one of the most memorable trips that we ever had. That's the end of October. We were there for we saw the big five and all sort of animals and their life. And it was so mesmerizing, I would put it, the African sky.
Yeah, and you realize how important it is to preserve these wild areas for our children and grandchildren's.
Correct. Yes, you remember, that there is not a single piece of plastic anywhere, but there are so many animals there in their own territory. No one is bugging another one. So simple life.
That's right. Although I realized that if we were suddenly put out of the vehicle and left in lion country on our own, wow, we'd probably be dinner for the lions.
That's right.
You realize how, survival of the fittest and apex predators and that sort of thing. It's quite different when you're right there in the middle of it.
Correct. Yeah, you have to be in your those ranger jeep. Okay. I'm done with the formal questionnaire. I'm going to ask this question, and I'm taking the liberty and asking this question. If there was anything that you wanted to share with us, but I didn't ask you.
I think that I spend a lot of time with, let's say, trying to pass it on to the next generation. That was one of the reasons why I returned to the university after my entrepreneurial activities and my brief retirements. And so I think that's very important. And I really enjoy teaching like a camp invention, which is run by the National Inventors Hall of Fame, meeting kids and trying to inspire them as best I can. And the same thing with students in college, it's important. And even teaching innovation entrepreneurship to my fellow colleagues, faculty, and grad students is also very rewarding, because I think inventing things and creating things are rewarding and good, but seeing that translation from the invention into something that's a useful product is super rewarding. And I don't mean monetarily, I mean deep down, seeing that you make an impact. And I think that impact really almost always happens through entrepreneurship. So I'm very bullish on entrepreneurship and startups and that sort of thing, although they are very stressful, but it's still very rewarding.
That's right. This is an important question that I keep asking, because two of my students, one is a CEO of his own company in the Bay Area. He's working on gas sensor. And another one, he is trying the same different topic in Mexico. And there's some, very often they talk to me, and I keep asking this question that as a society, we always celebrate the successful people and how much struggle that they have done before they became successful. Their contributions benefited us as a society. And we still couldn't figure out that how we can minimize this struggle for the next generation of the similar kind of people. This is an important question that we might need to ask ourselves as a society, that why they have to go through such a painful process. And I think, like, you know, that your current initiative in Dartmouth, I do know about the all the initiatives that you have taken that will actually provide us and will enlighten us as a society to really think, rethink that how we can make things easier for the people who have those kind of ideas, who have the drive, and to take something from the lab to, I would say, to the society. I'm not going to say the technology transfer or the idea to product, but it's really impacting the society in a direct way. When we think about the image sensor, and we have seen, we just discussed that how it has enabled the human machine interfacing and all those, but there are many different applications that we are seeing, many different impacts. From your perspective, which one you think is the most powerful impact of the CMOS-based image sensor, the cheapest scale image sensor?
Yeah, I think there's actually two things. One is that it's enabled visual communications, right? Zooms and that sort of thing, which has become so important during this pandemic. Really appreciate it. I think it's going to change the way we communicate regularly in the future. So that's one thing. That's kind of the obvious thing. The less obvious thing is that having so many people with smartphone cameras in their pocket means that they're able to capture events that can really impact society. And I'm thinking about social justice and how important it is that people have captured things with their smartphone that has hopefully furthered the cause of social justice around the world, including, of course, in the United States. And that's probably the unexpected application that I feel the most proud of with this image sensor technology.
Yeah, in a normal time, if I were in front of you, I would have most probably drop one or two drops of tear, but it's very rare for technologists, for innovators to look at that aspect. And not only you made that, but you observed it, right? So it's not that you wanted the machines to see, but the way that you see it, right? And I hope that the new administration, our new president, Biden, will actually have the opportunity, and we will try to reach out one way or other, that he notice this, because your voice is not only about the innovation or the encouraging everyone for the innovation, but what is the real impact of innovation, the social justice. We do recognize that a couple of years back in many places around the world where they lack in democracy, because of the people revolted, all the pictures, the images that came through using the social media, but more importantly, the hardware that they had, that's because of your innovation. And those places have changed. Some are still struggling, but hopefully they will get changed more and more. Thank you for attending this IEEE EDS-sponsored podcast. To listen to other EDS podcasts, as well as benefits and resources EDS offers, please go to the website eds.ieee.org. Thank you for listening.